would like to share with the commission. And so I will go ahead and call this meeting, the January meeting of the Women in the Economy Commission, to order. And we will start off with adoption of the minutes. The minutes are here for your perusal. With thanks to Gail for her work to get those to us and put them together.
I'll make a motion that we adopt the minutes from November 16th. Do I have a second? Commissioner Burkholder, thank you. All those in favor of adopting the minutes of November 16th, 2015, I'll indicate by saying aye.
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 Super. Well, let's move to the first item on our agenda. We have Representative Angela Romero joining us today to talk about her proposal for a family leave legislation. So welcome, Representative Romero.
Thank you, Representative Tavis-Halk. As you asked, I came here today to talk about our parental leave for executive employees. We're still drafting this particular piece of legislation and I'm meeting with Ledge Research on Friday to kind of finalize some language for it, so I don't want to speak out of line, but we can have this conversation on why this bill is important. That Representative Miller ran this bill last session. There were some concerns with some fiscal notes, and so we're looking into that right now, and I'm running that this session is important for all families that work for the state of Utah, and so this was a step forward for us. We just wanted to kind of open it up a conversation to the commission and maybe address any questions or have a conversation of why family paid leave is important.
Do you want to give us just a general kind of an overview of which employees this is generally going to affect and what, you know, what you're looking at in terms of length of time, those just kind of the general provisions of what you're looking at so far?
6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be executive office employees only. I mean, you know, people who work for state government, mm-hmm. who are in the executive branch of government. Sorry, I want to clarify that. And it'll be for if you've adopted a child or if you've given birth to a child.
Available for both men and women, or, you know, just parents in general, or how are...
We're working out that language right now.
Okay.
And, we've just barely started working on the language of this bill, so I don't want to provide information that's not actually there yet.
Any questions for Representative Romero or clarification?
Questions or concerns? And really, I wanted to come to get feedback about this bill and how commissioners felt about this bill and why they think it's an important piece of legislation for employees of the state of Utah.
Great. Chair Edwards, and then...
I was just wondering if you could give us some background about why this is important, what this means to families, what happens with families and individuals where this is not available as an option, and the lay of the land in terms of other states with paid family leave.
Looking at other states, New Jersey, Rhode Island, and California have similar initiatives. One of the reasons why this is important, this was actually brought to me even by a constituent, is just the amount of time to spend with your child and how it contributes to you staying within the workforce. There are many, many families that need both parents, or depending on your family structure, you need to have that time to bond with your child, but also ensure that you have you're able to still be the provider of your family when a birth happens or an adoption happens. So it's really about financial sustainability and ensuring that you're able to provide those financial resources for your family while you're spending time with your child.
Senator Henderson.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Romero. Can you describe what the current law is, the current situation, and what the difference between these two have that information with me at the first time. I just recently handed this bill, and Representative Telcock asked me to present, so I'm doing all my, I'm meeting with Ledge Research on Friday.
Okay, so we don't have any kind of family needs in the state of Utah already?
Or, I mean, is it called something different? As in LA, that's what.
Yeah. Just in terms of, yes, okay, so who might know? Thank you.
Yeah,
Commissioner Burkle.
Yes, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. My question, which you may not be prepared to answer this morning, has to do with FMLA and the relationship between this and FMLA. And the potential for combining this with FMLA in such a way that employees would be potentially away from the job for about 18 weeks.
This is what we're looking into. The group I was working with weren't able to attend the hearing today, and so I told Representative Tuchok that I would just come and let the commission know that I was presenting the bill. I am, as I mentioned before, I'm meeting with Ledge Research on Friday so that we can go over all the language and look at the history and everything, and I'll be glad to present before the commission again when I have more information. I just wanted to let the commission know that I was going to introduce the bill and that I'm working on language right now, so I want feedback of why commissioners feel like this bill is important or not, and have a conversation prior to me finalizing language on Friday. We're reviewing all of the questions you have right now, so I'll take that into consideration. Thank you.
Well, I think that would be helpful as just kind of a lay of the land so that as we move forward, especially with our legislative colleagues, there is an understanding of what's already there, and there may be some assumptions of how deep FMLA goes or how much of it is the prerogative of the state. In terms of augmenting it and how that would be complementary in terms of the work that you're doing. I don't know if maybe even there's any grant programs for states that are exploring this, or if they're obviously meeting FMLA requirements but want to augment, is there additional work that they could do in that regard? But that might be something else we could explore.
And I am putting, I'm doing the research right now, I'm putting some white papers together. So Senator Henderson, I would love to sit down with you once I have that all kind of aligned. All my legislation is kind of intersecting right now. And so I'm outlining everything. This is the last bill that I'm working on. And so I need a little more time to prepare, but I just wanted to introduce the thought to the commission. But do you have any concerns or questions in particular that you would like me to address as I go forward?
I couldn't say at this point. So not being familiar with what we currently have and what it is that you're specifically wanting to address or change. So once you do have that information, I would love to sit down and have a conversation, and maybe we can get a little bit more specific about any thoughts or questions or concerns that I might have, and then I don't know if we're going to have a meeting during the legislative session. But
we did last year, and I think that I'd like to do that, especially in light of there are other individuals, other legislators that have come to me and said, well, I'm looking at writing this legislation, but I'm not quite ready yet. And so I wanted to give additional opportunities, and then that'll give Representative Romero another chance to kind of talk a little bit more. But I think the questions are good because then that helps you know the direction of where some of the questions might come as we move through the session.
And I wasn't prepared today to give a full presentation. I just was prepared to just do the introduction. And I definitely will follow up with all of the commission members and ask for some feedback once I have that all in place. But thank you, Senator Henderson. I think it's important to have the history and the information on why we're going to ask to implement new policy and how it impacts us as a state. And so that's something I will have to the commission to meet the first week of the session, and then I will personally email everyone and ask for some feedback. But is there any other feedback outside of your FMLA question? And regarding as I go forward with this piece of legislation.
Yes, sure. I think in terms of laying out your case of why it's important, I know that the connection between paid family leave and economic security and stability for families is oftentimes there's a connection there that's pretty strong. And as you discuss this bill, I think that may be something to emphasize, especially in our state where there's a focus on keeping families together, keeping families strong, providing those options for parents so they can return to the workforce if that is their choice. And that family economic stability is a focus of a lot of groups and the Casey Foundation and others that are trying to find ways to strengthen families. So I think that's an emphasis that you could really focus on.
Commissioner Holmes?
Thank you. I was a little bit late, so I apologize if we're uncovered. But I think just from standing back and looking at it, I haven't seen any language of the bill. I would say the difference between this and the Family Medical Leave Act is that the Family Medical Leave Act, the employer doesn't have to cover that cost. They just have to save the position so that they can come back and retain a job. But they don't cover the cost. And it sounds like what this does is requires the employer to pay the employee. Am I understanding that right?
That's what we're exploring.
And so what demographic are you covering with this? State employees, all of the states or private sector?
State employees only. I'm the design branch.
Oh, okay. The executive branch. Okay. I would say that your pushback is going to be the money, if I'm looking at it.
Yes. And what the pushback was last session.
Yeah.
And I'm researching this, and we'll provide, as I said, that narrative and that background for commission members. And where I see that as pushback, but I also see as when if we do pass this piece of legislation, which I hope we do, it's investment in families and so long term it benefits the state versus thinking of looking at it from a short term perspective.
I was going to say, I think what helps the conversation in that regard, Representative, is looking at the cost to agencies for turnover and recruitment. Maybe targeting new parents and mothers and dads and kind of seeing what those costs are, if there's a way that you can extrapolate how much is spent on turnover recruitment, retraining versus the retention of the employees who, if they just have a little bit of a support during the time that they're able to stay home with their children and they come back. I'm sure that there are studies related to that, but that's probably where you might want to go with that. As much as we can quantify that I think will help with your argument of it's an offset of what would physically be the impact of providing that funding during the time those people are off leave. But I don't know why their flight's going off. But anyway, so there's a ghost in here.
Are there any other questions or feedback? I mean, that's one of the main reasons that I came today was just to get everyone's perspective before I go back to my office and
work on
this and my other pieces of legislation.
Commissioner Burkholder, do you have a question?
Or a comment? A comment, not a question. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that I want to go back to the FMLA issue, not as a question, but as a comment. Is correct that it is not required that an employer putting an employee on FMLA needs to pay for that. I think that the issue that we will need to address, given the fact that paid family leave is important for families, is the extent of time that we are talking about employees being away from the workplace, undue hardship on employers, and also exploring whether there is a way in which if the state does provide paid family leave for this class of employees for 6 weeks, whether that can be done as sort of parallel to the FMLA. So the amount of time that the employee would be away would be 12 weeks, which as an employer, that is a long time. It is a long time. It isn't simply an economic there isn't simply an economic impact. There's an impact on the work that needs to be done in the workplace. So that might be something simply to explore as you write the bill, whether having those happen at the same time so that, in fact,
someone has 6 weeks of paid leave within the 12 weeks, which is mandated by federal law for eligible employees.
Okay, thank you.
So I'm just looking online here at Representative Miller's bill from last year, and so I don't know what, you know, what your, how it's been compared, but just as a point of reference for all of us thinking about this. His net that he threw out was would include 168 state employees and 143 higher ed employees for a total impact of $2.5 million. So that's it. And I'm not sure exactly.
And that's some of the, I didn't want to further explore that with the commission yet until we have that really laid out with Life Research. That was one of the things we were looking at. One of the issues. And so until we have a set bill, a scope of that, and then running the numbers as Kathy and Anne suggested, that was the issue when it was presented prior in the committee before was the $2.5 million and the concerns with that. But I think there is an argument to be made that if we invest now, we're going to benefit long-term in the future.
Senator Henderson. Thank you. Just a quick question. And so we're talking both men and women, and is that what Representative, Miller's. I believe he had both.
That's one of the
kind of the cost, the general cost. I know the cost may be different, but
yeah.
Because really where I was looking at whether or not she's going to, what that would look like. The leave last year.
Can you differentiate, or
you have to just one everybody? I would imagine you couldn't discriminate.
But
we're just looking into.
We're exploring all of this, and so I really wanted this to be more of a brainstorming opportunity for me to get with all of you. But I understand that I probably should have brought some institutional history with me prior, and apologize for that.
Oh, that's okay.
It's helpful to discuss
those issues.
And I will. I'm taking notes, and so I'll have. I'm going to ask all these questions when. Prior to me meeting with them, our staff attorney on Friday.
Just thank you for exploring this issue. I think it's something that we hear a lot about, and it's tossed around quite a bit, and I think the conversation is important to have. So it'll be helpful for us to take your back from you in a few weeks, and just thank you for your effort on it.
And I definitely want to provide the history. Because as Senator Henderson said, it's important to have that historical background of where we have, where we're at as a state, and when we do pass state family leave, how does that impact us as a state as well? And so I will make sure I have all of that because I want to make sure I've addressed a lot of concerns before it even goes to committee. And so this is just the starting point of this particular piece of legislation.
And, of course, inviting the commissioners, if you think of things afterwards that would be good input for Representative Romero as we continue to work on it, let us know, or you can contact her directly. And, Representative Romero, thank you so much for joining us today. I know this is new, an ancient legislation, but this is what we're trying to do with the commission is invite people to start out at the beginning of the conversation so that you can kind of, like you mentioned, do some brainstorming about what the legislation might look like and what additional information either we can provide or you might want to seek as we move forward with developing it. So thank you for your time today.
I appreciate the commission supporting my efforts exploring my efforts with me. This, like I said, this bill is brand new to me. It's within the last 2 weeks. And so I'm finalizing some of my other legislation, and I wanted to, as I go forward, I will definitely include all the commissioners involved. And if you have feedback, Representative Edwards and Senator Henderson and everyone else on the commission, embrace some really valuable points that I'm going to take back with me. And as we move along in the session, this is one of my priority bills, so you will see it come up this session. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative Romero. Thank you for your time joining us today. So I'm going to divert a bit from the agenda for just a moment. Senator Henderson has another commitment that she might need to be pulled away from and actually wanted to present
for as an import for information only at this point. Some legislation that's in concern that she's working on, so I wanted to go ahead and give her that time. And do you just want to do it from your seat there? Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. So I have been working for the past few months on an issue that I never really thought anything about before, but I feel like it definitely falls within the scope and interest of this committee, this commission. And some of you who have been in the legislature for a long time, maybe this predates everybody, I don't know, but it's the midwife birth center issue. So 10 years ago, just as a little bit of background, 10 years ago, there was a big battle fought in the legislature that the midwives won, frankly, and they were allowed to license in the state of Utah. They have to have a national certification and pass a national exam, a nationally accredited course, and then they can license in the state of Utah and have the ability to practice in any out-of-hospital setting, which includes birth centers. There is a committee of appointed individuals made up mostly of members of the healthcare industry who are on what is called the Health Facilities Committee. And the duties of this committee is to regulate all facilities, all healthcare facilities in the state of Utah. Currently, the chairman of this committee is the CEO of LDS Hospital. For the last 10 years, licensed midwives have been attempting to open licensed birth centers to no avail. They have been blocked at every turn with a couple of regulations that are impossible. There's lots of regulations for birth centers. Some of them make sense. Some of them definitely go to the health, safety, and well-being of mothers and babies. Some of them are pretty silly, don't make any sense. But there are two that are absolutely impossible for the midwives to comply with. One of them is a written transfer agreement with a hospital, and the other one is a requirement that a doctor be present at every birth. And so they have been going before the committee for 10 years trying to get these rules changed. I have this case, to be honest, I'm listening to the committee hearing, listening to the audio, I've read the minutes, I've talked to members of the committee, to members in the health and hospital industries. What they have faced is widespread discrimination. And whether or not you like midwives or birth centers, the fact of the matter is they are being prevented from practicing within the full scope of their licensure. And the legislature is being kind of as an end run going around state law, direct contravention to state law. And I just wanted to bring this issue up. It's a very emotional issue for a lot of people. But to me, if you don't like the law, we have a process every year where you can come and try to change the law if you don't like it. But you don't go around to cronies who have broad regulatory powers and try to get them to use that power to discriminate against people. And that's what's been happening. So once I really started digging in and kind of seeing what was happening, I was quite alarmed. We have, not a lot of women that are licensed midwives in the state of Utah, but there are a number of them, and they're being prevented from entering the marketplace by their direct competitors. I brought this issue before the Administrative Rules Review Committee last month. The committee voted to put these two rules in particular on the sunset list of the reauthorization bill. The hospital and medical association, of course, aren't very happy with that. And they are, there's an administrative rules committee today beginning at 10 a.m., which is why I may have to get out of here. And they're of course, going to be asking the committee to take those back off the list. I hope that the committee keeps them on the list. Since the committee hearing in December, the Department of Health has been working with the midwives to revise the birth center rule to make it so that it's actually possible for them to become a job licensed birth centers. And also, you know, but that still has to go through the Health Facilities Committee in February. So until I think, you know, until those rules are changed within the Health Facilities Committee, those two rules need to stay on the sunset list, and maybe at the end of the legislative session before we pass that bill, we can take them off. I am writing legislation that would statutorily prohibit the requirement of those two things as a prerequisite for licensure for licensures. I'm also going to be addressing the authority of this committee. And not just because this committee has way, way, way overstepped its authority, which it has, but because there was also a U.S. Supreme Court ruling last year, FTC versus North Carolina Board of Dental Examiners, that deals with this sort of same thing. And I don't know if any legislators are here on the Interim Business and Labor Committee, but we dealt with this issue with some DOPL committees and a few other committees under the jurisdiction of Business and Labor last year. And the same thing fits in for some of the Department of Health committees, where you have appointed individuals who are competitors in the marketplace who have really, really powerful authority to make rules and regulations for their competitors, and no state oversight. So the Department of Health statutorily is simply required to do whatever this committee says, to enforce this committee's rules, whether they like them or agree with them or not. And so there were some dentists in North Carolina on a similar board who started issuing cease and desist letters to people who had teeth whitening booths, you know, popping up in malls and whatnot. And they pretty much drove everyone out of the state who had teeth whitening operations who were non-dentists. And the FTC came in and sued them. And the board said, you can't sue the state for violating antitrust laws. The state can't violate antitrust laws. And they took it all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court last year ruled that you didn't have enough authority to oversight by the state to be protected by the state. So, yes, the FTC can sue you individually. So that is kind of where some of these committees lie, including this particular Health Facilities Committee. They may not enjoy the protection of the state if there were to be a lawsuit. I'm having our staff upstairs, you know, give me a legal opinion, but we will be needing to address that committee as well as some others. So that's where I'm going. And I hope that legislators, I mean, you know, people are all over the map on whether they like or don't like or agree, you know, with midwives or birth centers or whatever. The fact of the matter is, it's state law. It's the law. And if people don't like the law, they can try to change the law. That's the process. That's what we do. But having this kind of circumvention of the law and undermining of the law is not right. And I think that everybody ought to be alarmed by that, regardless of the topic, because, you know, I love to, my little Martin Luther King Jr. quote, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. So, and I think that that's what's been happening for the past 10 years, is a great deal of injustice. So I just wanted to bring that up.
Thank you, Senator Henderson. And I know part of this is what we've been talking about as a commission, as we look at policies situations within which a profession might be dominated by women, we're going to have another discussion about another profession that kind of falls in the same arena. And so Senator Henderson brought this to my attention and asked to speak to it so that we can work, starting to develop this portfolio of understanding with our legislative colleagues that this is part of what we do as a commission, is explore those professions that might be dominated by women, and are there either political underpinnings that prevent them, or regulatory or statutory underpinnings that might prevent them from competing equitably and justly within the marketplace. And I think this is one that we look forward to continued conversation on, and appreciate you bringing it to our attention. Commissioner Rynette has a comment.
Thank you, Commissioner. I have just a quick question and then a comment. Did you tell me that the birth centers are open now? Is that what you're saying? Because you're saying they were highly prejudiced. They're not open.
So there are no licensed birth centers in the state of Utah.
Okay.
What the midwives discovered when they repeatedly were rejected in trying to open licensed birth centers, the definition of a birth center is a 2 to 5 room.
Okay.
It is 2 to 5 rooms. Anything above that is considered to be a hospital. But they discovered that there is a single room exemption for any
licensed healthcare facility to not have to be licensed, or for any health facility not to have to be licensed or regulated. So the birth centers, there are now probably 17, 18 birth centers around the state of Utah. They're all single room, totally unregulated, totally unlicensed. And anybody can practice within them. So we have this kind of subculture that a lot of doctors in the hospitals use as saying, look at this over here, this is bad, therefore we shouldn't license anybody because we have people doing stuff over here that there, but that is a direct result of the licensed midwife's inability to become have licensed person. So right now we are saying, let's modify two regulations, make them possible. You said written transfer agreement, maybe we need to have a written transfer plan that has specific things in it. In exchange for hundreds of regulations that the birth centers would then have to abide by.
So how I feel or don't feel about birth centers or midwives is irrelevant, really, but what I do feel, and I hope the commission as well, is the safety of the mothers and the child. So the doctor has to be present, and then there has to be a written agreement between a hospital that, I mean, all you got to do is call 911. Isn't that a written agreement? Pretty much. Okay, but my question about this, I was watching a commercial the other night and noticed that, okay, of course my children are adults, but if I had a young child and she had a fever, I just dial in and I have this FaceTime with this doctor, and he's going to tell me that my little child is, my gosh, it looks like she's got pink eye, okay? Why, I mean, as you're moving forward, the alternative is that instead of the doctor present, that you have some way of communicating and having a doctor or mid or, you know, what's the other one? It's not a doctor. But the
physician assistant?
Yes. But they're very specific about a doctor. So that it's just the safety, and do the birth centers have the ultrasounds in there, and they do all the cups, and making sure the child's heartbeat and all those kinds of things that they do. Would they do that?
Yeah. I mean, there are really specific things that the midwives can and cannot do.
Okay.
And the reason that having a doctor be involved is a barrier to entry is because no doctors will do it.
Okay.
And the doctor has to keep, it's kind of a sodium. So the doctor had in current regulation has to also have admitting privileges to a hospital. Well, hospitals threaten doctors. If they sign on to oversee birth centers, they're going to get rid of their admitting privileges. So you've just given a direct competitor complete veto power over an entire industry which they use joyfully. It's smart of them, right? I mean, I don't blame them necessarily. They shouldn't be required to have to sign on to a direct competitor to allow them, especially a for-profit hospital would have a fiduciary obligation not to sign something like that. So we shouldn't require them to do it, and we shouldn't require birth centers to have it. It doesn't make any difference. I want to just say, if you have a written transfer agreement, you've got woman A who is being transferred from a birth center to an emergency room in active labor, and this her birth center has no transfer agreement. You've got woman B in active labor being transferred to an emergency room from a birth center with a transfer agreement. They both arrive at the emergency room. How does the emergency room treat each of those women differently? They don't.
They don't. No, they don't. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the different opinion on this issue. I think it's this already is a law, and that's what we need to keep in mind. There's been already a conversation, a due process to provide and certify this professional to provide a service, and I think we do due diligence in the state of Utah to be safe to our patients, and every time we do with anything related to licensing, it's a turf issue. I mean, that's not, you know, my next bill is the same. I mean, I'm dealing with the same issue with the architects versus the commercial interior design. It's the same. And we can say, well, you know, you can, you know, put this horrific scenario. There's millions of there. And there's something I just want to say that I've learned through this process, and that definitely applies to this issue, and that is the director of DOPL, and he's really good. I know many of you guys have worked with him. We were at this meeting that Representative Chavez had, right? We were sitting there, and it was related to medical interpreting services, which are critical, also and kind of, you know, it's a lack of that situation in some instances. If you don't communicate correctly the information to the patient and vice versa, the provider. And he said something that was very telling. He said, look, the role of the state is to say that you meet a certain minimum requirements, whether you're good or bad. And people graduate from school and you're like, how in the world did they graduate as an attorney or whatever? It's the same on any other profession, right? I mean, they're meeting a minimum standard that the state provides, so whether they're good or bad, or they, you know, bring negligence or malpractice, that's a totally different place out, you know, that there's due process for that through our judiciary branch and so forth. And we need to keep that in mind. I mean, these people are professionals. You know, I always tell people who are interior designers, we're graduating them from our universities with four-year degrees. So you're telling me our universities are incompetent? I mean, then that's a totally different conversation when you go have it at higher ed. And, you know, and it might happen, why it makes you be the one that tells them that they're competent or not. And if a patient, if a consumer wants to use that service, we should not be limiting them to be able to provide information. And in terms of healthcare, which obviously you're dealing with people's lives, we have those processes, and nobody can deny access to someone to the emergency room and they should be treated. And there's enough case law that says that you can't do that, can't deny that access. But I think to have a system that promotes, you know, almost like a bullying mechanism, just to make sure you continue to have the biggest part of the market, it's not what we're about, and we should be at least allowing people to compete in a fair process. And I completely relate where, regardless of how you feel about the practice itself, and whether you want to use it or not, or have your family members use the practice, that they should be there as an option, and we should be able to make sure we don't limit access to those individuals. Because they go to school, they get trained, and they pull and get a license, and for them not to be able to compete, which is exactly here the same, you know, to me it's an issue of fairness. And what happens is you see it with groups that tend to be more oppressed, right? I mean, women, in this case, and I appreciate you bringing this forth. I mean, we need to have a conversation and make sure they know that we're watching as a state, that certain professions are being treated differently, and that's not, I don't think that's the way we want to continue doing business here.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions?
All righty. Thank you, Senator. Just keep us posted, and moving forward, if in the future meetings, if you'd like us to take action, please feel free to do that.
Okay, thank you.
So we'll move on to the agenda for our second policy discussion. Senator Escrinia and her legislation related to the interior designers. So,
thank you. And I'll be very brief, Madam Chair. And the reason why we've had a chance in a very lengthy conversation to present to the commission during the summer, you guys were very kind to listen. And also, I know this was a conversation that happened before I carried the bill in this session, I mean, at the end of last session, and this session was going to start. And what I learned is, going back to this whole notion of why this is important to the commission, commercial interior, what we're working with, the good news, the last good news, is that we've been working very closely with the architects, and we're almost in an agreement on the language where they see, you know, they've been the biggest, you know, ones with opposition and concerns, and some of them were valid concerns. By no means want to undermine their concerns and their level of professionalism of understanding what this whole thing is about. And we're right now in the process of defining, just so you know, we're stuck just defining cell and core within a building. And I've learned more about this diagnosis that I've never had one. I couldn't, and even though it was that complicated, but I'm glad somebody else is an expert in making sure we're all safe, life, safety, and you know, all the type of issues. And I know the architects obviously are professionals with 6 years degrees of 6 years that have to take a test and get, you know, licensed and so forth. And so what we're trying to do with a commercial interior designers, and again 95% of them are women in this case, is to allow them to compete on certain parts where they can then have their own seal and be liable. They will be liable like the architects, so there will be a liability component. They will never, you know, get away from that liability piece. and they will have to go to a licensing education experience and then a test, a national test, all through DOPPL, like they do with every other specific licensure process. It would be a certification and a license, so I'll clarify that. And it's for commercial interior designing, so it's very specific, and we're defining beams, I mean, how tall, I mean, we're at that part of the legislation, working with the architects. We've met probably 10 times in the last couple of months, and it's been a very productive process, and we may get to one or two things that we're going to have to agree to disagree, and then just take it to the legislature for just their feedback as well, and get to an agreement there, or just move forward. So we are, it's moving along, and so the final language is not there. Whatever what you're seeing right now is what we had, what we started during the summer. But I feel confident we'll get somewhere. I mean, the meetings have been good. It's been almost like a healing process. I feel like I've been like marriage therapy or something. But it's been important, because I think it's going back to this conversation of also respecting others' professions. And to me, and why I'm actually involving the universities, in this case, we would say, and Utah State Universities, both of them offer four-year degrees for interior designing, you know, and they're bachelor's degrees. And I wanted to be for them to be involved, because it also reflects on our own public education, our higher ed in the state of Utah. And I was a little bit offended when the architects said that they don't get enough education. I said, well, and let me bring the presence of the university, because then they have to answer it to us as well, because we're using our own tax monies and people's monies to, you know, subsidize these public universities. And if there's an issue with the education at our public universities, we need to address them. And they kind of back off from that part of the conversation, which has been, it's been good. I mean, it's been recognizing that, yeah, they're not architects, because then they probably will go to architect school. But there are professionals that can do certain things, and they're trained specifically for that, and they will take the liability, and they will still have to share and do a lot of things together with engineers and architects. Most of the work that happens in construction like that is actually a group effort. And again, I'm not an expert, it's not my area of expertise, but I've learned through the process that most of it is like that. But when someone puts a steel, they're the ones that also get paid for it, and that's when it becomes an economic piece. So it's not only about, you know, yeah, let me practice the full of my scope that I've been trained to. It's also an issue of economic, it's an economic fairness issue. And why I think it has to do with this commission is because it impacts disproportionately more women than any other men in this specific trade. So I hope that when we have that complete language, we can get the commission to support. I think it's important that the legislature and our colleagues know that there's a group of, you know, highly qualified professional women looking to these policies like the commission is, and that our, you know, their job is to bring forward the public policy. And we just thought that as legislators, we may have to take different positions pending when we are in the middle of session and our constituency, and there are different things that make us vote one way or another, but I think as a commission, it's critical that we bring forward one voice about good public policy for women and in the workforce, specifically in this case with some of the two we've been discussing. So I'm open for questions, but the good news is we're getting somewhere on common language, and you know, and like I said, it's been a long process, but I'm confident we'll get there, and we're just right now literally our what's stopping the agreement is how high the height of the wall can be before they can make any changes to the wall. So keep in mind there's also another layer of safety pieces, which is they also, you know, the city has to, or wherever the construction is going to happen, has to go and do an inspection. So it's not like they are the final, you know, individuals making the determinations, but you know, I want to be sensitive to the life and safety of the public, and you know, so it's been very specific, it's been very lengthy each time we talk about occupation, you know, occupation, meaning of the size of the place, how many people can be there. We remove, you know, hospitals, we remove clinics, I mean, anything that the architects found to be more hurtful, to be, you know, potentially, you know, damaging for a group of people with children, for some schools, so forth. But I think there's been good compromise. I appreciate you the commission listening to this process, because it's been, I know, a lengthy process and very emotional. Going back to this with people, not only their professions and their livelihood, but it's also something they love. I mean, usually most people work in areas that they appreciate and they love their careers and their training and what they're doing. So I also want to be sensitive to that, both the architects as much as I am, you know, of course, to the commercial interior designers. But I'm, you know, I hope we can get the commission moving forward in being outspoken about policies that make sense of fairness and not only in the workplace but also competitive in an industry and we can, you know, allow for more of that discrimination and disparity. And with that, I'm open for questions, Madam Chair.
Senator Henderson. Thank you. Thank you, Senator Escamilla, for your work on this. I know it's been a lot of work on this for a long time. I really appreciate it. You mentioned that you took out hospitals, clinics, schools, those types of things. Currently, are they allowed to, can they design for those?
So, the way it works, it's a great question. So, the commercial interior designers can work as long as they are, like, sponsored by an architect.
The stamp of approval. Okay.
Approval of the architect. So, they already are working on all this field, and this bill will not change that. What the bill will do is they will have their own skill that they can use for very specific occupancies. So now we have some specific areas where they can do it, mostly office space.
Mm-hmm.
And that was part of the, you know, the compromising. So I just start somewhere, so, you know, and gradually and incrementally move where they're going to prove to, you know, to the community or to the architects that they can do this without them, and they're picking the liability. I mean, no one else is taking that liability. So they already work in every occupancy available. They just have to work under the, you know, the auspice of that skill of approval of the architect.
So are there different aspects to the design of a school than there is to an office building?
No, it's just basically who are the occupants.
So the architects still want to make sure that everybody knows that the interior designers aren't as good as them. And if they want their children to be safe, the architects need to put their stamp of approval on. Even though it's the same scope that they can do in other settings and that they've been trained to do. So this is where I'm going to have a little bit of a problem.
And
where I, my mean Deidre rears her ugly head, because it taps me, honestly, the premise that they're saying for them. I understand you have to compromise to get stuff done. I totally get that. But I'm personally a little bit entrenched by the insinuation that the mostly women who are these professional interior designers are okay, you know, they can do some office spaces, but if there are children or sick people involved, oh no, they're not good enough.
And then
that's a premise that's being set intentionally by
right. Certain
people.
Yeah, and just that is, you know, children, sick people, and also anywhere where you will stay overnight, so sleeping. So, like, you know, a hospital or a clinic or a hotel. And that's, it was very tricky. So it was, you know, and they're going to tell you, oh, well, we gave half of, you know, we feel this is, we're giving a lot of our side. But it's been, if that's where it is, and the conversation goes back to what you said. And that, you know, and that's bothersome, and they tell people from out of state that I'm sure that I'm here lobbying against it because they were not happy. I said, look, the bottom line is, I think it's an essential office for our institutions because we're training them here. I mean, these are individuals that are graduating from our schools, and, you know, they get all technical and they have their history, but yeah, basically the occupancy is based on that. And so you'll see there's, like, I don't know, A to Z occupancies, and, you know, A is for restaurants, B's.
So under the current structure of the bill so far, are you going to encounter the opposition? I mean, are you trying to structure it so it's kumbaya, everybody doesn't get everything they want, but it's a step in the right direction and nobody really opposes?
I think we're going to get there. There's a group that no matter what are going to oppose because it's just an odd group. There's not even a, I can't even describe you because it's like a mystery why they oppose anything. That what they want is nothing at all. So
really,
I mean,
they're probably worried about, let's not even start this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, they're just saying, well, if it's not open for everyone.
Oh, so they're objecting to the licensure or the certification.
Any type of certification, as long as it doesn't open for everyone. And actually, technically, it is open for everyone. You just have to go to school and take a test and pay for your, for, you know.
So they already have to go to school. I mean, they currently have to go to school. It's not adding anything other than maybe a few certification requirements through DOPL.
Yeah, but your biggest, you know, your biggest, I mean, the one that we're trying to take care of is that architects, which were,
right,
by far has been the biggest.
So are they going to be kumbaya,
though? They're going to be kumbaya. I mean,
as long as everybody knows,
yeah,
that they're way better.
It's clear. And I think it's a great conversation, and, you know, it's been painful. I don't know that I will ever be able, I mean, I can't afford them, but I don't know that I would be scared of asking anyone to build one of my house or anything. I could.
Any other questions?
So, Senator, are you speaking some endorsement at the commission this time, or do you want to wait until we get into February and see if, you know, what that bill actually looks like, and then we can take a look at it there, or what is your...
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the prerogative of the committee, but I think, you know, I would like to get support, but if they want to see the final language, we can certainly email a lot sooner. We're just waiting on, you know, like I said, the height of 18, which, and then I have to get educated about how IKEA is throwing a lot of children from that, setting their beams correctly, so, you know, so anyways, I mean, if that's the case, I would love to, you know, then send a language that everyone feels comfortable based on the language itself, but, you know, my goal is to get support of the commission based on, you know, the aspects I described, more than anything that, you know, disproportionately impacting women and their ability to, you know, to perform a profession and be fair in that competitive process.
Commissioner Buchholder, did you have
this was less comment to this particular bill than a general question to the commission and to the legislators present, which is, are you aware of any other legislation that is in process that would promote or hinder equitable competition in the marketplace for professions dominated by women? We've had two examples here. Are we aware of anything that is in the works that would do something similar with other professions or that would actually hamper them?
I am not aware, not at this time, but it's a good point to bring up is kind of the counterweight of work that we could do and awareness that we should build related to potential legislation in that regard.
Commissioner Wallace?
Oh, sorry.
I just have a comment, and this relating to the guiding principles, which I think we still need to.
I know.
Which is just fine. We're all here today, but just in going over our purposes, and this is probably the one that comes to mind most often, but of the areas of our guiding principles, one of them is employment and workforce. And it says we value women in the workplace as contributors, leaders, and visionaries. We support women in discovering and making informed career choices. And we advocate for equality, the development, recognition, and advancement of women in the workplace and encourage work-life balance.
Mm-hmm.
This fits right in with our guiding principles, for sure. Of course it does, but I just want to remind us that it's part of our guiding principles. So I feel like we should do something.
Okay, super. Thank you, Commissioner. Any other input?
Thank you. Just going back to your question, the Senator, Representative Edwards, sorry, I give you a bit more senator, but Representative Edwards did send an email to all the legislators asking if there was any specific bills related to, you know, and she put the guiding principles and part of the statute. I doubt that someone that's going to do something really harming will be like, yeah, please review my bill. So, you know, the chances, I don't see it, but here's the other tricky part and why we're all probably here without a bill in our hands is that this has been a historical year for our number of bills that have been filed. There's more than, I think, 1,200 somewhere we are now. So the tricky part is, yeah, we may be working on this for a while. We may have some ideas. And, you know, just our staff doesn't have, I mean, we don't have the capacity. So it's unfortunate. This is not the only issue. We have the Generational Poverty Commission that is just getting stuck and moving forward because the language is not there. And it may be changing a little bit the dynamic of how we do business at the legislature. So we may have to change some new rules and how many bills we can file. There's conversation about it. We do have legislators to file 60, 40, you know, bills in a session. So it's a very tricky, but just so you know, this is my number one priority bill. For me, and I think the senator mentioned, it's also her, one of her priority bills, so that gives us a priority to try to change the drafting. But we're in line. I mean, we're literally hitting 800 bills. I mean, one of my bills that I filed about 2 months ago is 845.
Yeah, that's
99. Oh, okay, so you made me feel better now. But that's going to be also a component to just as like we discussed this. And we may have something that's like on the burn for our team that may be very scary for us. And so it's going to be, we're going to rely a lot on all of you to keep an eye on something that may be potentially damaging to our, or I guess some of our advising principles. I don't think advise this one or two or nothing. I mean, hopefully it's two that are positive and trying to move forward and bringing that equity component to the table. But right now, it's, everything is so scary because everybody's behind. I don't think we've ever been this behind in the last 8 years, 9 years of, you know, since we've been here. So it's going to be interesting to see how it develops.
Commissioner Burkholder, you mentioned follow-up.
An additional question to the commissioner's comment about the guiding principles. What struck me when she read those was that the focus was on the workplace, and there was no mention of the marketplace, which is why I appreciated your comment, Madam Chair, and the Senator's comment. I think we're talking about broader issues here than the individual workplaces within which women pursue their careers and their jobs. So I just lift that up as a word and a framing of our work that gets to larger economic issues for us.
Thank you for the input. All righty. Well, I'm open to motions, or if we prefer to defer this until in February. You, Commissioner, you're a member of the commission, so if you wanted to present that forward as something you would like for us to...
Yeah, I would love to make a motion that we have an opportunity to present the bills that were presented, they have an opportunity to forward their language that's available, so they're available, and seek support support from the commission on the specific language as they get available. And are we going to have a meeting in February? You know, if we could have that be a priority in our meeting, the agenda, that'll be my motion, that we prioritize. Now, by that time, we should be able to have something.
Okay. Alrighty, all those any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, I'll put that motion forward. All those in favor of the recommendation by Senator Escamilla to review this in February for consideration of being endorsed or supported by the commission at that time. All those in favor?
Aye.
Right. Thank you for the presentation. All righty. We're going to move on to subcommittee reports. I'm going to go ahead and do a brief public policy subcommittee report while Commissioner Wallace moves towards the presentation table to present an update on the website, and invite Chair Edwards to weigh in on this. But the main thing I wanted to share with the commission were two things. We haven't had a policy committee since the fall, but two things of note and of excitement. Number one, and it's also kind of something that ties to the research committee and all that, and I'll speak to this a bit too, is that we did get our award from Walmart through the YWCA's support and their lead as our fiscal agent for that request for that grant. And if you want to, do you want to take a second and tell us about where that came forward and where we're at in terms of moving forward with that award?
I wish that Commissioner Robinson were here, but this was a collaborative effort on the part of the YWCA and the commission, and the award from Walmart is intended to underwrite the research, the qualitative research that the research committee for the commission wants to undertake, statewide research that I think Commissioner Robinson will talk more about at some point. Focus groups, a way to delve below the numbers, to find stories of women's lives in urban and rural areas, whether they're inside or outside the workforce, and supplement the quantitative data that we and others have collected about women's lives in Utah.
So it's a great, it's a wonderful thing that we did that. I think that helps solidify the role that the commission plays, and that when you have outside stakeholders that see the importance of our work. So I want to thank the YWCA again for being very quick and responsive when we were working on that grant proposal, as well as other members of the research committee that were involved in that process. And Chair Edwards, would you care to speak to that additionally?
Yes. Just echoing the thanks to those who were involved in getting that grant written. And I was at a Women in Government meeting this past weekend where I ran into, coincidentally, the government relations representatives from Walmart, and sitting there talking about some other things, and all of a sudden it dawned on me, Walmart, I owe you a giant thank you. And she was well aware of this grant, that it was for qualitative research. She knew a lot of the information about what we're going to be doing with the money. It was really exciting. They're excited about it, about the potential of this being sort of springboard into potential additional relationships. One of the big focuses for Walmart right now is the hiring of veterans. They have a program where they will hire any veteran and find them a position within the Walmart family and then help do some training. So this is men and women both. But it speaks to one of our focuses as Commissioner Chavez, how can I present it to the Executive Appropriations Committee and others following this, our last meeting in October? We've had several opportunities to present the Women in the Economy Commission and give our year-end report. And one of the things that we spoke to in our presentations were the fact that we were going to be addressing three specific groups going forward that we had not really drilled down into. One was veterans, one is minorities, and one is older women who are returning to the workforce. So I'm excited about the potential partnership with Walmart that could expand beyond this grant. And it was really nice to have an opportunity to thank Amelia, and I forget her last name, personally on behalf of all of us.
So secondarily, as a part of our report, when we were giving the report for executive appropriations, we hadn't heard word yet on the Walmart grant, but when we reported to the Economic Development Committee, both Commissioner Wallace and Commissioner Burkholder were there to join us for that meeting, and Commissioner Burkholder handed me a note, just as Representative Edwards and I were getting ready to present to the Economic Development Committee, so we were able to share the good news about the grant. And then that was a really great kind of key into the request that we made of the committee to remove the sunset. So I'm going to have you address that a little bit, because that's our second good news about what happened in that Economic Development Committee for the last day of interim.
Thank you for that reminder. We did present to Economic Development, and the bill that removes the sunset on this on our commission removes it entirely. Was adopted unanimously by the Economic Development Workforce Services Committee. So we will go straight to the floor. I cannot remember the number of the bill, but it has been numbered. And Senator Bramble is on board with our
63.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. So watch for House Bill 63. Senator Bramble is on board with that, and we will hopefully get that moved, you know, through both bodies within the first couple of weeks, and are very, very pleased to be able to do that. I think what that
provides us as an opportunity to...
Sorry.
56. I like 63, but 56 is even better. Yeah, okay. I think it gives us an opportunity. Now that we don't have that weighing on us, that we have a sunset in mind, it really frees us up to get deeper into some of the issues that we're focused on, and I'm really excited about that opportunity.
And lastly, I think what we'll need to do then moving forward, and there are a number of us that sit on the Social Services Appropriations Committee, which is where it came through last time, and maybe we can explore shifting it over to another Appropriations Committee, which I think would be smart, maybe taking it over to the Commission of Labor, or, I don't know, let's have a discussion with legislators as to where we think that might make some sense. In terms of looking for a request to provide additional financial support to administrative support to our team from DWS that have been so great to work with us and expand where we can go. So I think that's the next thing. I think that was a priority for us to explore as legislators is where we want it, how we want to augment that appropriation and get that solidified. So. All righty. Super. So a lot of good news. And we're excited about being able to move forward with our commission a little bit more ardently without that hanging over our head in terms of the sunset. So moving forward, and thank you, Commissioner Burkholder, for additional information related to moving forward on the research. And I know that Commissioner Robinson had mentioned in the next meeting, so to provide that you'll all have another meeting before that time, hopefully, and be able to give some additional information. So, on to communications, and Commissioner Wallace has some information to share with us. And what do I need to do to get her? When do I hit the
Okay. Well, the video being streamed down, I did have one comment about the Walmart grant. And this is from a comment that you had made during the community meeting here when you announced that the grant was accepted, was that one of the priorities might be access to capital for women.
Okay.
And so that is one thing that's really important to what I do as the executive director of the Women's Business Center. That has exclusively to do with entrepreneurship. So my comment is the Women's Business Center, which is where I work, was awarded a grant from American Express to go statewide with online entrepreneurial training. So I would be interested in maybe collaborating in that effort. So
wonderful.
Maybe we'll follow up.
And then maybe for the next meeting, depending on how much we have on our agenda, you can tell us a little bit more about what that might look like for you and what you might be seeking. We can have more of an audience discussion on that.
That'd be great.
All right, super. Yay, look at us.
All right, so if you are the job on this screen?
Sure.
Okay, so this website, although the launch date was planned to be January 1st, is not live right now. I would like your feedback on the website and really a decision making today, whether to go live or get with some of our photos, which I have received from some of our commissioners, but have not had our pictures planned out and have a photographer do them yet, just for this website. However, our commission felt like we could launch this website with the images that we do have there of Utah women. And as long as we have the right information on there, we can also gather information about what this website needs to be for women. And that might be good to have feedback, although it is already live. So the Committee for Communications for the Women in the Economy Commission consists of myself as the chair, Olga Dela Cruz from Utah Hispanic Chamber, Mallory Bateman from Community Foundation, she's actually here today, and Chris Stepp from Rio Tinto. So we have a variety of age, gender, ethnicity on our committee. And of course, we would like to add more and hopefully have Barbara Munoz to join us a little bit later on as well. We've had two meetings since our last committee meeting. And the first one in November was really talking about identifying our target audience for this website. And not just the website, but also SEO that's involved in the website. We might as well not have one if we can't drive traffic to it. However, having the women.utah.gov is probably going to be a good start. We also talked about estimations published by team reports, reaction to any type of media coverage, as well as preemptively put out information. As far as the website, you'll see it here on your screen. The Utah Interactive organization put together our logo. However, they didn't ask for any feedback on it, so I'm asking you for feedback. If this logo is what we want to do, what we want to keep,
I think commission is very small. I don't know if that's a buzzword for us or not, but if you wouldn't mind sharing your comments, whether it's here in person or by email, that way I can get some feedback to you, how interactive they can make changes to it. I think it's okay. I don't know that I love it, but what kind of comments do you have right now in person?
That's very exciting, but I don't know what I want. It's kind of one of those things. This isn't it, but I don't know what I want.
I could offer them some keywords to think about, and maybe give us three or four options.
So I guess the first thing that I see is it looks static, and what I'm looking for is something that feels a little bit more movement, not too frilly or feminine. I mean, I brought that up before, but I want it to be dynamic. That's the word I'm looking for. I want some dynamism in what that is. And right now it feels very governmental and static.
Dynamic, that's a keyword. Any other keywords we should consider?
I would like a graph, sort of a visual, what's that called? Like a picture.
Some graphics involved.
Yeah, the graph is involved in the words.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Any others?
So something that came to mind, I thought there was a political event that was kind of geared around women a number of years ago, and I loved the logo, and it just kind of reminds me, it was a silhouette of a face of a woman with some hair kind of, I don't know, a little bit flying, a little. And it was all, red, white, and blue, but which we wouldn't do. But anyway, just maybe some kind of a nice little, even a silhouette of a face would be maybe nice, something.
Commissioner,
very nice. Hi, Mallory. Love her. She's like my best bud here. She also knows that I'm really challenged on this kind of stuff. But the AFL-CIO created this really amazing little logo, and the message was the folks that brought you the weekend. So it's just a little, it doesn't say it's union, it doesn't say it's non-union, we're just the folks that brought you the weekend. So because I'm on this commission with all of you wonderful people and all of your degrees, sometimes I feel extremely intimidated, as I share. However, I have a really difficult time explaining what I do on here. And that economy word, and I'm working with women, and I just looked at a little gal that got laid off at UPS because she's our food pantry with her little 3-year-old. And I'm what does that mean to her? But what buzzword for her is employment, jobs, opportunities, those kinds of words that need to be down to that 7th or 8th grade. And I'm really saying 7th or 8th grade, please. But anyway, that's all. But I love it. I do. And I can learn to get around on it with help.
And maybe what that looks like is a motto that's underneath us. It kind of says who we are. I mean, it says what we do. It's kind of like a
tagline.
Yeah, a tagline of some sort.
For a logo that represents visually what we do, who we are, and then it's
reminded us a few moments ago, which I have totally forgotten, and thank you for reminding why we're here. It was lovely, and it is lovely. We've worked hard on this. Thank you.
This is a great input. Anything else, anyone else?
Yes, I have skipped ahead to the mobile version.
Just okay, I emailed all of you. So please,
Just because I'm having to go back to meeting here within 5 minutes, and so I guess the website, and this is awesome. Really, it's fun to see this, and you've really populated a lot of the drop downs. That's really great.
So is that another page?
It's you can type in what's on the search bar, the URL, into your phone, and then pull it up that way.
It's
Anyway, I guess we have two different audiences that we're trying to reach here, and maybe we can reach both audiences, and maybe we need to decide between who's our main focus. But as Commissioner Barnett just said, if this is a resource for that, you know, recently unemployed woman who's like, how can you help me? So are we a help to the women of the state, or are we a resource disseminator to colleagues, to other professionals in the state? And those are two different, like, you look down the resources drop down, I mean, that is just lots of really great information on the research piece, I mean, lots of links. That is not going to be helpful to the woman that Commissioner Barnett is talking about. So we've got to meet both. I think for right now we have to kind of meet both of those. And the accessibility and the friendly factor of the initial visual on the website is going to be important for that regular woman out there.
Right.
And then having these drop-downs with all of the other facts and the articles and everything is really important. But that's where a softer, friendlier logo could be helpful.
One comment I had, I sent an email out about, after thinking about our website, that we hadn't planned for a call to action, and I felt like that's the most important thing we could possibly do, is to present to anyone who reads it in these two categories what they can do about it. And so my suggestion that's drawn on this website right now was to connect our guiding principles to action for others. And so it would be, you know, our guiding principles talk about income and opportunity on an individual level. So we would have a call to action for the individual woman of our state. Here's what you can do to help women in the state. And then the next would be families, what families can do. And then education, what educators and students can do. And then I guess where I think we should change that other one, the last one, to positive workforce and marketplace, where we're asking businesses, we're asking nonprofits, churches, educators, policymakers, legislators to act, basically. And what our committee really talked about was that our commission isn't everything to everyone. We impact policy specifically. So we would encourage others to do their part while we do our part and not try to be everything to everybody. That makes sense. Hopefully that helps to only speak a little bit about what we've been talking about. I will give this input to Utah Interactive, and we can make any changes we want to this website, even during the time, and make it into something where people want to go or they find information they're looking for. And we hopefully promote those who are already doing a good job. That was another thing we talked about in some of our community meetings. That we, first of all, want to have set our priorities, our strategy, and that would come from the priorities that this commission has for the year. So whatever priorities we set, and some of them we've been mentioning specific bills, when we have our priorities, we would like to set our strategy according to those priorities for the year. We want to identify our influencers, the low-hanging fruit, organizations who maybe already care about this sort of thing, already doing something about it. And we could actually give an example of these groups, individual women, families, organizations that are doing something. And a spotlight would be good so people can understand, like, examples. Some organizations that may not have that as a priority wouldn't know how ideas of how to implement anything like that as far as any of our guiding principles at all. We wanted to make sure that we knew how to accelerate what we're doing as quickly as possible with our low-hanging fruit and with social media possibly. We did talk about social media, but we didn't feel like we needed to lead everything, but we could lead our part and hopefully have some sort of conversation going on, probably using social media. I don't know who would lead that. I don't know that it would be us. We don't want to get into all these different things, but be our part and hopefully be some sort of fake home base for the whole thing. The last part of it, we wanted to... I already mentioned that. We just want to make sure that we have a call to action on the website, each person knowing what they can do for it. I might have
forgotten a few things, but that's basically what we're doing as far as our priorities and our thinking. But we do want to make sure that the website is launched. Also, my question to you, I guess, is two options. We could wait until the photos come in. We already need to update the logo. Or we could update the logo and launch what we have with images that have been sent to us and work on updating them as we go along. Any information to the website that maybe with feedback is the kind of website a woman would want to have. Or do we wait and launch this perfect thing but not have anything out there right now? Which do you think is...
I personally think we should watch it, especially in light of the fact that we're going to be trying to do some legislative work to support both financially and with the sunset removal and everything. Commissioner Burke Colby, you have your
own. Thank you, Madam Chair. I was not planning to respond to that particular question, Commissioner. I wanted to add on something that to what Commissioner Barnett said, which is that I do not see the commission or the website as being an immediate direct resource to women who are looking for work. But I do think under the resources section, we might simply have a banner or something that says, are you looking for work and opportunities? And then women can click on that, and there can be some standard links that will at least get them started. Because I think that there will be women thinking that the Women in the Economy Commission can help them find a job, and that's not our job. We're not doing that kind of direct service. But we have an interest in them all having a job if they want a job. So if we can somehow capture, link and send to good resources off the site without spending, you know, a lot of ink on it, I think that's worth doing.
So, thank you. Any other comments or feedback for the great folks from the Communications Committee that have been doing some good work? It's just exciting. But I mean, that would be my inclination is let's just get this rolling so we can, if it's organic and we can make changes as we go along. I just think it's fun. It's helpful for us to have something to show and to turn to with our colleagues and say, look, we're Utah.gov. This is, I mean, Utah Women. Women.utah.gov. I will get those. and be able to show them that we are making progress and we're moving forward and this is part of what our charge is and we're organically moving through it and it's a work in progress, but we're still working. So,
any questions?
All righty. Thank you again for your good work. I'm very excited about all this. Thanks. All right. If there's no other business to attend to, know that we'll get a doodle poll to try to pull together a meeting in February because I do want to meet in February. We do want to meet in February because we'll have work to do as we move forward. Feel good about the productive discussion that we've had today, and thank you all commissioners for joining us today. I'd like to shoot for the beginning of February if we can, so we'll pull our calendars and we'll try to find the time. I know it's difficult during the session, but we've done it before, you know, in the morning or sometimes around lunchtime, like on a Monday or a Wednesday or a Friday when we don't have caucus. So I think that's probably what we'll look to if that seems to fit for those of us here in the legislature. All right. Super. All right, being no other discussion that I see indicated, I move a motion to adjourn. All those in favor? Aye. Thank you for your time.